Well, it was fun from the standpoint of it's always fun for me at the Empire Fair from the standpoint of all the different discussions you can get into. And I found it similar when I got up to Brown County, and some of the folks were, having gone to school there and graduated from Northern, it was just fun from the standpoint of kind of an old home week for me.
Old theory.
We're on. We're live here, everybody.
Good morning. Darla Rogers is on the line.
Good morning. This is Bob Saar in Pierre. Chairman Hansen, because I'm here in the Capitol building, would you like me to run through the roll call?
Yes, please. And I have indicated to John and Greg that I would appreciate it if you would take care of the meeting.
I would be happy to do so. Okay, so we've got Gary Hansen online. Dusty Johnson?
Yes, sir.
Talbot Wisorek?
Yes.
Larry Thompson? Larry Thompson?
Here.
Thank you. Darla Rogers?
Yes.
Danny Law?
Yes.
James Groff?
Yep.
Anybody else on the line that I didn't call?
Yes, George Strandell with Golden West.
Good morning, George.
Good morning, Bob.
And I'd like everyone to note that we do have a court reporter here in Pierre. So as much as possible, I don't think we're going to take any testimony today, but as much as possible, if you're speaking, do so. Try to be cognizant that we may have to interrupt you in Pierre if you're on the line, and you probably can't see us very well from where you're sitting. So please do recognize that. Is there anyone else on the line that I didn't call?
Marco Northrup is here with us in Rapid City. This is Darla.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. Thank you, Darla. I think Sherry, our court reporter, is going to also need people to identify themselves on the line when they speak. It is Friday, August 19, 2005, at approximately 9 a.m. We are here in the State Capitol Building, Room 412. This is the time and place for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission ad hoc meeting on CT05001. My name is Bob Saar. I'm a commissioner for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission. And joining me telephonically are commissioners Dusty Johnson and Gary Hansen, the chairman of the Public Utilities Commission. We have a couple things slated here. We have the commission hearing oral arguments on all of the pending motions, including Western Wireless's motion to bifurcate the complaint and counterclaim. And at this point in time, I am going to turn over to John Smith to handle the procedural aspects.
Okay, as you all know, this has been kind of a rush here to get ready for this, and I'm going to have to exercise some degree of liberality, I guess, in handling this because of the number of items. And maybe I'll start with this with either Bob Ryder, who's in the room, or Ms. Rogers or Mr. Wisorek. We have, I guess what I would propose is that Golden West begin, because you were the first movements here, and then that we follow up with Mr. Wisorek's responses on those motions, and then also present its own motion at that time. Is that a satisfactory way to go about this?
That's satisfactory with Golden West.
Talbot?
That's fine by me.
Okay, and let me, and I'll run through what I think we have pending here, and maybe you can then correct me if we're misunderstanding all of what we're dealing with here today. First, we have Golden West motion to strike or dismiss, which pertains to paragraph 13 of the original complaint. We have Golden West motion to prohibit Western Wireless from contesting the accuracy of data provided, and motion to strike late filed claim. Golden West motion to compel. Golden West motion to permit additional discovery, and Golden West motion to postpone hearing. From Western Wireless, we have one motion, which is the motion to bifurcate. Have I captured everything we're talking about today?
Yes, Mr. Smith, I believe you have.
This is Talbot. I think your reference to the complaint should be paragraph 14 on their motion to strike, just as a clarification.
Is that what it is? Is that what it is, Darla? Is it paragraph 14?
I need to look at it.
And I'm trying to pull it up here online.
I mean, we know what it's about. We're talking about, it says, the motion says 13, but we might as well know what we're really talking about.
Paragraph 13 addresses affiliated companies are liable to Western Wireless for twice the amount of the damage. Paragraph 14 does make an allusion, does note statutory authority that would entitle Western Wireless to double its damage.
Excuse me, Commissioner Johnson? This is Sherry, the court reporter.
Yeah.
Could you just state that again? Paragraph 14 does note statutory authority. And then what did you say?
I was quoting from paragraph 14, quoting, entitling WWC to double its damages as provided for under FEBL 49.13.14.1.
So... either Ms. Rogers Mr. Ryder, ought your motion reference both of those paragraphs?
Yes, we would amend our motion.
Does somebody have a dog in the room?
That was me objecting.
Oh. I think that wasn't scurrilous material, but... Is there an objection to the motion to amend?
This is Talbot. I don't have an objection. And in fact, given how everybody's got on the line for this, I'll tell you, I've looked at this, and on behalf of, I've looked at the back of the statute, I've done some additional outside research on it. The statute talks about a court being able to award these damages on appeal. After reviewing the statute and the motion, I agree that it talks about court and suit. It would appear that I can potentially preserve this question for appeal, but it does appear upon my review that it's not really, the commission is not deemed a court as I can interpret it. So we'd be willing with that clarification that if the commission would adopt the commission could grant the order, reserving that should this matter go on appeal, that the appellate court may have some jurisdiction to review whether additional damages are available.
Does Golden West have a response to Mr. Wazarek's offer?
Darla, you want me to respond? Or?
Yes, you can if
okay.
You want.
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, either... the commission has the authority or doesn't have the authority. There's nothing necessarily that says that because Mr. Wazarek's client would like that to be preserved for the court, if this is on appeal, to somehow consider that is not what the motion is. The motion is just to dismiss those claims, and I think it ought to be granted. I don't think there's the authority under the statute.
Does counsel for staff want to weigh in on this?
Staff's position is that the motion should be granted. I don't think that we do have any authority under that statute. And I'm not sure that we need to take any action reserving if it goes on appeal. If it goes to appeal, I think Mr. Wazori can make that argument there.
I think what you're trying to say, Tal, here is you don't really want to argue about it today, but that you're not conceding the point. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I think I can raise an appeal based on some of the language in the statute, but I'm not going to argue about it today.
This is Commissioner Sauron Pierre. I would move that we dismiss that particular, I want to get the right terminology here.
Paragraphs 13
and 14 of the complaint.
And I might also, maybe we want to include in the motion the associated prayer for relief.
What was that, John?
The accompanying prayer for relief.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I will incorporate that into my motion, so.
Commissioners, there's a motion.
I'm just quickly reviewing everything in paragraph 13 and 14. Let's make sure that.
Would you repeat the motion? I'm reading it as well.
Well, and I'm going to try to incorporate my thoughts plus John's addition, but the motion was to dismiss paragraphs 13 and 14 of the complaint and the associated prayers for relief.
I second that.
Yes, I would concur. Commissioner Dunn.
With that, either Mr. Ryder or Ms. Rogers, would you please proceed with your other five motions?
Yes. Which? Commissioners, my name is Darla Pullman Rogers, and our law firm represents Golden West Companies in this case. And for purposes of the argument this morning, and since Mr. Ryder is there in person, as you know, I'm going to turn this over to him to present oral arguments on the balance of our motion.
Please proceed.
Thank you. And I would ask that we reserve a moment or two when I'm completed if Ms. Rogers has comments relative to issues that I've neglected to raise. I would appreciate to have that, having that opportunity.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Commissioner Saar and Commissioners Hansen and Johnson, who are on telephone. The motions are very straightforward. What this litigation involves, or what this proceeding involves, is an interconnection agreement between the parties, and the PUC's interpretation of the rights and obligations of those parties under that interconnection agreement. An important part of the agreement was the inter-MTA factor. And we set out in our motion language from the agreement that reflected how the parties at that time agreed they would handle the decision on what the factor should be. This is a charge owing from Western Wireless to Golden West. So it's obviously a very important element for us, for our client, as part of our counterclaim. And under that, the parties agreed that there was a baseline of 3%. And then the parties said that each of the parties to this agreement is obligated to proceed in good faith toward the development of a method of traffic study that will provide a reasonable measurement of terminated inter-MTA traffic. Well, of course, we began this effort shortly after that agreement. Larry Thompson, who's with Vantage Point on our behalf, started making efforts to contact Golden West and to negotiate a method of determining what the measurement should be and how it should be utilized and what type of traffic study could be utilized. Mr. Thompson, after he contacted Golden West Companies, after he contacted Western Wireless Companies, they acknowledged at that time that when they put the materials together, that the calls that were routed for termination via an inter-exchange carrier would be excluded. And this was last fall. I mean, there was no question that the information and what Western Wireless was going to try to put together was going to exclude these calls that are going to be were terminated via an IXC. After Golden West, or more particularly Mr. Thompson, received the call detail records from Western Wireless, which they put together, we confirmed with Western Wireless that those inter-exchange carrier calls had been excluded. Those that were terminated by an IXC were excluded. And they confirmed that. And Western Wireless, when they confirmed this information, the results that we got from them were similar in nature to the results that we tried to put together on our own. So we had three different situations. We had it when last year, when Western Wireless put together the procedure they were going to employ to utilize on the traffic study, as indicated in our motion, they said calls originating on Western's network and routed for termination via inter-exchange carriers will be excluded. Number one, they said it's excluded. The second time we contact them, Thompson's in contact with representatives from Western Wireless. They say this information is here, it's excluded. And then we get the interrogatory answers from Western Wireless in, I think it was June 30th. We've had no, prior to this time, we've had no claims or suggestions that these were included. And when they gave us the interrogatory answers on June 30th, again, they stated that this was excluding traffic terminating via an inter-exchange carrier. So we've had at least three confirmations of this. And our expert, Mr. Thompson, is preparing his report, preparing his computations in a similar nature, frankly, that the Golden West or that the Western Wireless expert had been preparing his. And then on August 5th, we get an interrogatory answer that says, wait a second, the information we provided previously is not accurate, and you can't rely upon that. And on, I think it's the 9th or the 10th, there's additional issues raised by Mr. Wazorek in his letter. So, of course, this is a cause of great consternation to us because in preparing our counterclaim, we've relied upon this information, which they've represented in interrogatory answers and in correspondence that was accurate and that we could rely upon it. And the concept was that both of the parties were working in good faith toward putting together this traffic study. And we were relying upon the call detail records of Western Wireless to assist us in this regard. And they agreed to do it, and they agreed to provide this information to us, and, of course, knew we were going to rely upon it. And then this month, we suddenly learned from Western Wireless that its study that it did is flawed, and that it included calls terminated by the IXC. And from a legal standpoint, what they're almost doing is impeaching their own evidence. I mean, suddenly they're saying this is all true, and now, oops, we've suddenly decided that there's problems with what we provided to you. You can't rely upon it. And if you rely upon it, then, in effect, what you're doing is you're trying to make you're double-dipping, and you're trying to make claim that for something that you're not entitled to if you rely upon the information that we provided. So, you know, under the agreement, it was Western Wireless's obligation to help develop the study. They ultimately did so after they'd earlier confirmed that it would exclude calls terminated by IXCs. When they provided it to Golden West, their representative indicated that it had excluded those calls. The information was consistent with our analysis. It was something we could use for our other companies. The interrogatory answer, the first one anyway, also excluded it. Our expert computed the monies that we were entitled to based upon that. And it seems to us, as I indicated, that in a way we're almost kind of getting whipsawed here. Here it is. You can use it. And after we rely upon it to build our case, they say now it contains significant flaws. Their own data contains significant flaws. The discovery deadline's passed. At least for this point in time, for the hearing on the date it's scheduled, if we proceeded to trial on this, it would appear that the data they provided to us, at least they'd make the argument that we can't use that data, even though they were in good faith required to develop it. Or if we did use it, then they'd fault us for using it. So we're in a box, and through no fault of our own, through nothing we've done other than relying in good faith upon the information that they've put together. We would argue that, what are the alternatives for this commission and under such circumstances? Well, there is an alternative, and it's the first alternative is more harsh than other alternatives. One alternative that's available, and if it's available under South Dakota statute, and 15-6-37B, small b, says that if parties fail to follow a discovery order, that the court in that case may take the facts as otherwise established. In other words, just say to Western Wireless, you can't now come in and claim that the that the information you put together and you developed can't be utilized by the other side against you because you're the ones that put it together. It's almost like an estoppel argument. The second one is that it would refuse to allow Western Wireless to use or support their defense to our counterclaim with objections claiming that somehow this computation is faulty because it includes rather than excludes these calls terminated with IXCs. That's the first alternative that's before you. That's what we've asked for. We've also indicated that another alternative for you would be to continue the hearing on this matter. And frankly, that's not preferred by us. I've been working with Ms. Rogers. We've been and Ms. Northrup. We've been trying to get ready for this matter. Our clients anxious to get this resolved, as you might imagine. But how can we go forward? How should this matter go forward on by the commission interpreting all of the issues involved in this agreement when there's inaccurate data that was created by Western Wireless, or at least provided by it, and suddenly we are in a position that we must try to go forward if we had to in a week or 10 days with information that they're going to come in and claim isn't accurate. I mean, it just puts us in a catch-22, certainly at a very minimum. So the first part of my motion, and I don't know, Mr. Smith, how you want to handle it, the first part of the motion deals with either granting what I'd call the Rule 37 kind of sanctions, or alternatively granting a continuance. I can proceed with the other motions if you'd like, or if you'd rather just stop and whatever your preference is.
I believe that is, I mean, I'm assuming that you've dealt now with all of the motions. The only one I don't think you addressed that I see is the motion to strike late filed claim. Well, that's a little different kettle of fish from the others, but.
Well, I can. Why don't I just proceed with the rest of them, because my comments are frankly brief on that, and then I just asked Ms. Rogers if she had any additional comments. But the other issue involves our request for additional information from Western Wireless, and we would suggest that. When there's a duty required of it under the agreement, they have some responsibility to either provide the information they had agreed to provide or else an obligation to provide that raw data to us so we can put the information together. And if the commission orders that they provide that information, then we'd ask for there be some date certain, and we'd ask that it be affirmed that it is accurate and that we can rely upon it, or alternatively, if Western Wireless says they can't determine what they need to determine from their data, then provide us the raw data. And we've talked to Mr. Thompson, who's on the phone today. And if we had that raw data, we could at least work toward coming up with information that ultimately we could present to the commission in support of our counterclaim. And of course, part of that issue would be that we may well need additional time, not only if the matter was continued, we would need additional time to get that information from Western Wireless or to either by way of raw data or otherwise, and then have our opportunity to analyze it and plug it in with what we have available to ourselves. And then they've asserted a new claim, or attempted to anyway. The statute in SDCL 15-6-15A and B speaks of the fact that amendments can be granted from time to time, but when amendments are granted, that a continuance is reasonable to allow the party responding to this new claim to meet that new evidence. And I would cite just generally 56 ALR 2nd 650. And then 15-6-15, parens small b, parens, where the statute specifically talks about a continuance in that section, but the that treatise that I cited also talks about it as being a proper response to newly pled issues if that is what Western Wireless wants to do. You know, it seems that lacking this, and I guess it probably goes more to their motion for bifurcation. I mean, it seems more reasonable to put the issues together that need to be together rather than having one issue resolved at one hearing where all of the commission and its staff has to be present, then another issue resolved at a second hearing when the same thing is true, and then the third hearing on this newly raised issue from Western Wireless would require a third hearing. So it seems to us the judicial economy is for this commission even more so than for the parties, and the expense would indicate that there ought to be a continuance, and that continuance ought to be of all the issues before the commission. Thank you.
Do the commissioners wish to go through all of the attorneys' arguments relative to the motions first before asking questions, or do you want to do that as we go along?
My inclination would be to hear from the attorneys on the arguments and then come back to some of the questions.
This is Gary. I prefer to hear from both sides before asking questions.
That's fine by me as well.
Okay. With that, Mr. Wieczorek, would you like to proceed?
Yes, I would. First of all, appreciate the commission holding this, and I apologize that it took me till yesterday about 1 o'clock your time to get you a response to the motion filed on Monday. But I didn't get the exhibits until Wednesday that accompanied the motion, so I didn't want to try to respond before I had the exhibits in front of me. I don't want to repeat everything I put in my response, but simply put it this, you know, this argument that we behaved in bad faith is very factual and intensive, and I think when all the testimony is taken, you'll see how complicated this was and how hard Western Wireless worked on the inter-MTA stuff to try to get it figured out. This, what the interconnection agreement calls for is a default rate, and then for the sides to get together and in good faith try to work out a methodology to determine the inter-MTA. Now, what has happened in the history of this is that Western Wireless sat down, tried to work with Larry Thompson. Now, Larry Thompson, needs to be remembered, wasn't representing just Golden West companies. There was a discussion where he was representing the majority of the ILECs in the state. Western Wireless's position was this is very expensive, the methodology you're coming up with, or we're starting to come up with, and we don't want to do it for every company because we don't want to spend this kind of money to try to figure this information out. This is not something that you can simply go to your switch and dump the data and have your answer. The fields, the necessary information don't exist. So what they agreed to was a short time period to collect data going to Golden West companies. Well, actually just to Golden West and four other companies that aren't part of this suit. And Western Wireless position was from those companies you would have sampling to negotiate everybody else. So what that took on Western Wireless's part was coordination across a number of departments to have in place a system to collect that information over a two-week period last October. And then it took several months of trying to clean that information up. And what we're saying about the CDR information they got, and if you look at Mike Wilson's affidavit, he says he told after the test was over, yeah, we agreed that we were supposed to try to clear out the IXC traffic. But what he told Thompson after the test was it was suspect. They think they got most of the calls, but they couldn't get them all because some of the long-distance carriers they went to either didn't have the information anymore because they dumped it, so they turned that information around so quickly they don't keep the call with information that long, or they couldn't get the information to match up in the computers, so they couldn't eliminate calls. I mean, we're talking, I believe, just the SS7 data over a two-week period that Golden West produced was in excess of 68,000 calls just to Golden
information that, you know, it's like a spreadsheet that you just punch in a couple numbers and it coughs up. So, as I said in my response, is look, we don't think this is the best test. We think there's problems with this test and it needs to be accounted for. Yes, Western Wireless saying that you can't submit this information, you can't argue about how big of a factor it is. I think that's what testimony's for, is to discuss the basis of the test and how it would impact the final inter-MTA factor. This argument that, you know, they can make these arguments, but like I said, as Mike Wilson said in his affidavit, he told Larry Thompson that they thought they got most of the calls, most long-distance calls, but it was suspect because they couldn't get it all. Now, I don't see it as such a big surprise. We're not saying, given the position and given what you have to go through, nobody's going to have perfect information in this thing. So from that standpoint, I think we should be allowed to testify to it. I think there should be questions as to how big of a factor or how big of an impact they believe that to be and give you some range of idea. The other concern I've got on how this is being postured, and this deals kind of with the motion to compel, is it's being postured as if Western Wireless agreed to some perfect methodology for every company, and we've agreed to do it for every company. And like I said, it's incredibly expensive, incredibly difficult, and incredibly time-consuming to get all this information. We collected it for five representative companies to try to negotiate the remaining companies from there. What they're doing on their motion to compel is trying to back you in to forcing us to do this massive test. And I'm a little frustrated with the motion to compel because they don't really cite to interrogatory where they're trying to compel this information. You will note that on June 30th, they asked for raw CDR information. Well, actually, they asked for it earlier, and our response on June 30th was, look, we can't provide that information. It's overly burdensome and unduly necessary, because they asked for like 16 months of that data. And what, you know, as I represented, the Golden West data alone for 2 weeks was over 65,000 entries. And Western Wireless doesn't, and just so you understand, when I talk about 65,000 entries, I believe that's only the calls delivered that would be subject to the inter-MTA, so it's not all traffic expressed for a 16-month period. They know we don't keep that information that long. And now I'm facing a motion to compel. You know, I get a little frustrated with this argument that, oh, it's a last-second deal, it's Western Wireless's fault. When I told them I was going to give them that information on June 30th, why didn't they come to us then? And now, here we are, 10 days from the hearing, and it's an emergency. You know, I think you do have alternatives on that CDR information, and the alternative is to have, I'm going to have Ron Williams and Mike Wilson there to ask them how it was done and what and how much of the IXC traffic they thought they missed. The hype made over my August 9th letter was a question where it's our position that if there's some IXC traffic, taking those broad numbers at face value, there could be a double dipping aspect. And so we're going to provide testimony about to the extent we think that that information could be purged or cleaned up. I was just doing, that letter was written so the commission understands to try to clarify some issues for this hearing. And it was something discussed by needed the council, then including commission council, that I'd write a letter trying to clarify some of these issues so we all could get these issues clarified and know exactly what we're trying. I think the alternative is you hold the hearing and you take the testimony then. As to the statute cited by Mr. Ryder, I believe those statutes deal with if I'm violating a discovery order where you told me to do something I haven't. Well, that's not the situation, and if we would have wanted to dealt with this CDR, you know, protection at least of raw data, the CDR information, we could have dealt with that last month because they knew on June 30th our position on going through and doing these massive data dumps and putting questions. hundreds of hours of trying to clean the data up. I want to talk about the raw dumps for a while. Mike Wilson's affidavit that I supplied is fairly clear, saying, look, you know, we don't collect the kind of data that you can make an inter-MPA calculation with. That's why you had to come up with a methodology. You know, I don't know, and because of the short time, I don't know how long it would take to do a raw dump. I don't know if they want it for 16 months or whether they want, and I don't believe we have it for 16 months, or whether they want it for a two-week sample period. But it's going to cost something. It's going to be fairly, it could be fairly expensive depending on how much and what they want. And, you know, should this commission continue the hearing and order a raw data dump, then I think that has to be with a contingency that we're entitled to collect our cost, go through, and get that information for them, because it's something not done in the regular course of business. It's going to take, even if it's a two-week period, it's going to take a substantial amount of time to some person off Western Wireless. The transiting claim appears to be this new is the new claim that seems to be bouncing around out there. And if you read their motion, it appears the first time this comes up is just last week or the week before. Well, the transiting issue, as soon as what happens on these is, because of the counterclaim, we went back and did analysis of all the bills. Golden West Company alone, just Golden West, not its affiliated companies, was charging transiting. It's our position under the interconnection agreement that not, they weren't entitled to do that, and there is no agreement to pay transiting. So I, in a letter to Ms. Rogers on July 15th, and to staff, raised the issue and say, you know, because we're talking about the bills, this issue is out there. It's interesting in my letter, which I attached as an exhibit to my response, that I state in my last paragraph, if you have an objection to dealing with this transiting issue during this proceeding, please let me know immediately so I can make a determination of whether I should move to amend the complaint or file a separate complaint. And now all of a sudden, 3.5 weeks later, this is a terrible issue. Well, I'm frustrated from the standpoint is the week after that, why didn't they call me and say, look, we don't think we can deal with it on this, or if we think if we're going to have to try to deal with it in this hearing, we need additional time. And I could have dealt with it then. And now I'm stuck being painted as the Darth Vader of the world for bringing this issue up at the last minute. You know, I wasn't trying to play hide the ball. As soon as the issue came up, as soon as I heard from Western Wireless that, hey, we discovered this issue and it's on billing, we don't necessarily think it's related to inter-MTA, but do we need to bring it up in this hearing? Frankly, I don't think it's a necessary component of this hearing because it only deals with Golden West, because it deals with an issue. But whether the transients do or not has nothing to do with the calculations of an inter-MTA or a refund, with the exception of refunding transients. And we could hear it in a different complaint. I offered it up at that time to try to streamline things, and now I'm getting it shoved down my throat. If these are issues, if they come up, I think the, you know, Golden West throws the term around bad faith pretty readily. But if there's bad faith on dealing with some of these issues on this motion, it rests as much with Golden West as anybody, because they've known about these issues, and all of a sudden now it's an emergency. And those are the reasons I don't think the continuance is necessary. Now, one of the things on it, and I think the commission realized, I generally readily don't object to continuances as long as they're a reasonable request. However, this has been a very frustrating on behalf of my client. In the Golden West company's responses to the first set of interrogatories on June 30th, and Golden West admits that they're holding over $220,000 of money, even under the Golden West calculation of Western Wireless's money. And they're just holding it. I mean, as longer we continue this, they're just using our money. And I think that sets a bad precedent that if somebody's gotten overpayments, they can just delay something until they can just claim all we've credited against. I think they should be made to pay it back on a more expedited basis. I apologize, I'm bouncing around a little bit looking at my notes. If there's any questions, I'll answer those. If there's any questions on the information I submitted yesterday, I'd be more than happy to answer those.
One thing I would appreciate, Mr. Wazarek, is if you would, I don't think you addressed the motion to bifurcate. Would you like to address that?
You want to do it at this time. That primarily arises out of if there's going to be a continuance. I will tell you this. The inter-MTA issues and how you can try to gauge that inter-MTA is going to be far and away the highest time-consuming part of this proceeding. Now, our original complaint was, look, we want to be paid back what we was overpaid, and in fact, at that time, when we filed it, the Golden West companies admitted they were holding over $500,000 of our money. That part of the complaint, I think the complaint can be bifurcated from the inter-MTA issues. I see the complaint as being maybe a half day, the complaint issues being a half day, while the inter-MTA being a day for sure, just to explain the history, especially with the allegations of alleged bad faith, and go through all the facts and how it was negotiated and everything we attempted to do to try to figure out inter-MTA in good faith. So I thought that given that they're holding money of Western Wireless, that could be held. As I said and made clear in my motion to bifurcate, I'm not endorsing any continuance, but if the commission should decide, I think we can bifurcate it. Now, the only on that bifurcation, I want to be clear, is that our calculations and our refund, and as happens in almost any case, especially where there's a contract case, where you assert, okay, I believe you owe me money, when you're going back to the bills, your calculations may change. One of the things we discovered in going back to the bills is that it appears there is a difference between that refund in that Golden West companies are charging this intrastate charges to up their charges to us and using those as a set-off, and that intrastate versus interstate would be an issue in our complaint aspect. So I want to be clear on that is not solely an inter-MTA issue as to whether they can charge intra versus interstate on our calls. I believe that covers it, unless you have additional questions.
Mr. Ryder, do you have any response now? And then next we're going to turn to determine if staff has any questions of either of the attorneys. And Darla, I know you're out there. I don't know. You may want to chime in here, too. I haven't heard from you. I know Bob Ryder here invited you to talk, and I'm not sure that we gave you that opportunity. Do you have anything to add, Darla, at this point?
I would like to add just a few points, if I might, and thank you for the opportunity. First of all, I would like to point out to the commission, and this is maybe partially in response to Mr. Wazorek's comments, but I think we need to remember here that all of the obligations contained in the agreement were negotiated between the parties and agreed to by Western Wireless in separate agreements with each company. So now to come back before the commission at this late date and continue to complain and whine about the requirements of that agreement in negotiating a traffic study methodology is not appropriate. Western Wireless agreed to do that under the agreement. We are now 3 years down the road, or 2 years, 2.5 years down the road. The inter-MTA default factor when we entered into the agreement was 3%. At this point in time, when we're nearing the end Mike Wilson, he states that he told Larry Thompson that the data was suspect. Well, first of all, we don't agree with that, and there's no evidence that they presented to support that. And they did not now raise this until 2 to 3 weeks before the hearing. Mr. Wazorek says that they should be allowed to testify about range, but it seems to me like by raising that issue at this late date, Western Wireless have also gone another step, and Blake basically raised a new issue in their defense. If you look at their response specifically in paragraph 12, they want to raise the issue of double dipping. That issue only comes into play because they've now called into question their own data, which they repeatedly represented was accurate and excluded IXC traffic. But they even go beyond that in their response, and they say that Golden West is asking this commission for the authority to collect both inner MTA and access charges. So they're saying that we are asking the commission to double dip. And I submit that that is not correct. We have never, ever requested that and are not requesting that now from the commission. And that issue clearly goes beyond the complaint that Western Wireless filed against us and rises to the level of a new claim. Finally, I would also point out that the raw dumps that Mr. Wazorek talked about, and again, I would point out that we have had over 2 years to collect this data and to try to get something worked out, and it hasn't happened. With regard to the transiting issue, that also is a new issue. And as Mr. Wazorek just pointed out in his comments with regard to the bifurcation, the intrastate versus interstate issue was not raised in the complaint filed by Mr. Wazorek and by Western Wireless. In response to the comments concerning bad faith and holding Golden West holding WWC's money, that is no less true from Golden West's perspective. By refusing to even come to the table and negotiate on the inner MTA factor, WWC is holding Golden West money. It's no less true one way than the other. And Golden West is, in the meantime, crediting back or paying that money back. WWC is doing nothing, and we still have exactly the same default factor on the inner MTA that we did when we started. We disagree with the motion to bifurcate, and Mr. Ryder may have more to say on that. There's the fact that one claim is more time-consuming, perhaps, than the other is not a sufficient legal reason for bifurcation. We believe that that would not serve the purposes of economies of justice. If you bifurcate in this state, we're not talking about one hearing or even two hearings, but potentially three, potentially more, depending upon how many more issues come to the table. We have agonized over this as well in bringing these motions and trying to determine what's the right course in this case. Quite frankly, we felt as if Western Wireless has changed the rules of the game, the bottom half of the ninth inning, and we either need a chance to have additional innings to respond to the change in the rules, or else they need to be precluded from changing the rules. To come in and attack the credibility of your own data, contrary to your representations all along, has placed us in a position of that is extremely untenable. They have created these additional controversies by their own actions, and we would ask that you would look at all of these facts and considering our motions. Thank you.
Mr. Ryder, do you have additional argument?
Yes, and I'll limit myself rather than rebutting Mr. Wazorek. I think Ms. Rogers did that effectively. I'll just limit myself to the motion to bifurcate. We resist that, obviously, and bifurcation is the exception rather than the rule, and the burden, obviously, is on the party that's seeking bifurcation to show the basis for it. I'm familiar with other occasions, and I know Mr. Wazorek is too, where bifurcation occurs, but most generally it's in a situation where maybe they'll bifurcate the liability part of the lawsuit from the damages part, so that if liability is not found, they don't have to spend 2 or 3 days going into damages. Or they might bifurcate a contract claim in a lawsuit from a tort claim, because, or a more particularly, a equitable claim from a legal claim, because one of them is handled by a jury, one's handled by the court. Now, those are situations where you see most generally bifurcation is approved. And bifurcation is, when you're looking at that, it's within the discretion of the body, obviously, but you look to the economy, to the trial entity, and most normally they talk about the trial court. Will the resolution of one claim resolve the others? In this case, clearly it won't. This is going forward regardless of whether it's bifurcation or not. Then you look for judicial economy. Usually, judicial economy tends to urge the combination of claims so you don't have three separate trials. Judicial economy usually says, let's get these things together. Let's have one time, one occasion. If it takes 2 days, fine, where we sit down, we hear everything that's relevant, and we make a decision based upon everything we hear. If we hadn't filed this counterclaim, likely Western Wireless could have argued, well, it was a compulsory counterclaim, you didn't file it, and it's part and parcel of the agreement, and therefore you've waived it by not filing it. So, of course, we want it resolved in this particular proceeding. They look at different witnesses or different evidence. The evidence in this case all evolves from this agreement. And the question presented to the commission is, what are the obligations and the rights of the parties under the agreement? That's the one issue that you resolve. And that issue has to resolve not only the issue that Western Wireless has brought forward and the additional one they now seek to bring forward, but it also has to resolve the issue that we brought forward. And so, therefore, it's only proper that they be heard in one particular proceeding. The question, Ms. Rogers mentioned it to some extent, but they look at, does bifurcation eliminate a prejudice to a party? Well, in this particular case, Western Wireless is saying you ought to interpret the agreement so that certain monies are owing from Golden West to Western Wireless, and now bifurcate it so we can get that now. You know, it's not unlike the request they made in the motion for summary judgment, which you denied, where they wanted to come in and have summary judgment upon their complaint. I'm surmising some of the reasons that you made that decision, but I'm assuming in part that the reason you made that decision was it because you thought it best to have these all resolved together. And so, and remember, when you talk about prejudice, the basis and the need for the continuance had nothing, absolutely nothing to do with actions of Golden West. Mr. Wazorik talked about the interrogatories that they responded to on June 30th, where they say that the traffic terminated via an inter-exchange carrier was excluded. I mean, we relied upon that. I don't know when they found out, in their opinion, that it wasn't going to be excluded. It was going to be included, but we didn't get anything until they filed their next set of answers to our interrogatories on the 5th of August. So bifurcation should avoid prejudice. It shouldn't create it. It should be to the benefit of principally the tribunal, not to one party. This is a single agreement. It's the responsibility of each party under it is what the PUC needs to interpret. Lastly, it seems like the better procedure is to determine the rights and the obligations of the parties in its entirety or in their entirety, rather than in bits and pieces, a little bit at one hearing, a little bit at another hearing. If we've got all these issues before you, we want them resolved. Western Wireless wants them resolved. Let's put them all together at a proper occasion and present them to you and have you resolve them as you believe appropriate. The motion, we suggest the motion for a bifurcation should be denied, and they've not sustained their burden. Thank you.
Mr. Wazorik, do you have any additional argument before we turn to staff and open it up for staff questions first and then questions from us?
The only additional comments I'd have, first, in response to Ms. Rogers, I'm not here saying we're trying to get out of negotiating inter-MTA rate in good faith. What I'm saying is we've attempted to do that up until, even after this action was filed, I let representatives of my client meet with Mr. Thompson and Ms. Rogers, try to continue to negotiate it. Going back to that history of how the analysis was done was to enlighten the commission as to the background on these issues. It was not to imply that we somehow don't believe we have to negotiate interconnection, inter-MTA in good faith. I think I was illustrating the fact we've attempted to do it, and we continue to attempt to do it. We'll have to say is to Mr. Ryder's claim that we said that there was no IXC traffic in our first round of discovery. I'm not exactly sure what interrogatory is relying upon. He's relying upon. I know we said that that methodology is supposed to eliminate that, but as I said previously, Mike Wilson had told Larry Thompson that there was some of that still in there. To that extent, I think that was a bad faith or inappropriate, or that we were trying to play hide the ball on that either. Finally, Ms. Rogers said a couple times something about I didn't put something in my complaint. It has to be remembered that some of the things she's complaining about that I didn't put in my complaint are things that have arisen in response to the counterclaim. I did not anticipate having to go through inter-MTA litigation in collecting an overpayment. So I don't see how I could put it in my complaint. So with those few comments, I would let you move on to staff.
Ms. Wiest?
Well, maybe I just had a couple of questions. I was just wondering, and Mr. Wiesorek, when did Western Wireless actually discover that the study didn't adequately remove IXC traffic? Is there a date for that? I didn't see that.
I would have to ask Mike Wilson.
Oh, okay.
He went back through his emails when this issue came up and said he knew that he told, they said to Larry that that they didn't get it all. My understanding, some of the IXC traffic they could identify, but there was at least one or two carriers where they couldn't make matches because of the way those carriers kept their data.
And then, I don't know if anybody would be able to answer this, but is it possible that if a higher inter-MTA factor is ordered by the commission, would that in any way impact the amount of recip comp minutes that WWC is seeking the refund for?
It would impact, I guess it would depend on, this is how it was already for the court reporter. Me, it's going to impact, depending on when the rate would start, it could impact the amount. As to the minutes, I would have to defer to somebody who's more technical on that to give you an actual whether it impacts the minutes of use.
Okay. That's all the questions I had.
I have some questions, too. Maybe the commissioners do have questions before I...
Commissioner Thompson, I don't have many, but I do have a couple. First, for Mr. Ryder or Ms. Rogers. There have been some allegations or allusions to bad faith. Let's just assume for a moment that that was true. I'm still puzzled a little bit by the motion to prohibit Western Wireless from contesting the accuracy of the data. I appreciate Mr. Ryder's letting me know the sort of the statutory authority for that. And yet, would the public interest really be served if we know that the data isn't what we want moving forward with the inaccurate or incorrect set of data?
Darla, you want me to respond? Or do you want
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Well, Commissioner Johnson, frankly, that's why we, in our motions, didn't necessarily state it in the alternative, but gave different procedures that the commission might utilize to remedy the issue that it finds itself facing. And one of the issues that courts do from time to time is that they forbid a party from contesting issues or from presenting evidence inconsistent with a position that they've previously espoused. I mean, it's kind of like deposition testimony where a deponent testifies at a deposition and then comes in or even at another trial and comes in and tries to say, no, that testimony is not accurate. Well, another witness says the testimony from a witness for the same client's not accurate. Then there's a dispute, and sometimes the entity can be almost like a stopped or prevented from contesting the position that they've taken before. So is public interest served? I suspect that if you're looking at the public interest as a general statement, the public interest is best served if all the issues are resolved with as much information as possible. As I read something the other day, the responsibility of lawyers is to make sure the corners are swept clean and that the information is there available for the finder of fact to resolve, not to necessarily prevent that from occurring.
Thank you, Mr. Ryder. You moving out of the motion to compel Mr. Resort and Western Wireless, you've stated that they don't know exactly what information you've been asking for, and that they're not the appropriate discoveries outstanding for this motion to really be in order. Do either you or Ms. Rogers have a response to that?
Darla, you want to respond to that one?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Included in our motion was a reference to production request number 2, and that was also an exhibit to our motion. And it also refers to paragraph 27 of the interrogatories. And so I think that Western Wireless did not respond either to interrogatory 27 or to production for request for production of documents number 2. So I believe that there are outstanding discovery questions out there that were not properly responded to. Now, if Western Wireless contention is that those are too broad of a period and they do not have data for that long because they purge their data, they don't purge it for 60 days, we would take the data for, 2-week, 3-week period out of the 60 days that they have. We believe that we don't agree with the position that there are not outstanding discovery requests out there. And we've included those in the documents we filed.
Okay. And as we, asked Mr. Zora a question about, essentially with regard to the motion to bifurcate, how closely related are these two issues? I was hoping to get a response from either Mr. Ryder or Ms. Rogers on that.
Well, Commissioner, this is Bob Ryder. I think that there may well be some evidence presented relative to plaintiff's claim or Western Wireless's claim that might not be relevant to our counterclaim. And there may be some evidence that we would present in our counterclaim that would not be specifically relevant to their claim. But the point that I think is most important is that what the commission is asked to do is to interpret the agreement and determine the rights and obligations of the parties under that agreement. And so we think that what would occur is that there ought to be the interrelationship of that agreement, and there's various parts of it. I mean, you've heard about 3 parts right now or 3 issues that the parties are in disagreement about. It would seem to us that the economies of having the commission act at one time on all of these issues would benefit not only it and its staff, but would also benefit our clients. And I think that from the Golden West standpoint, they're not interested in having to participate in 3 separate hearings when we could have 1 hearing where their attorneys and their staff, whoever they need to have present at the time can show up for the hearing and the matters can be resolved. And that's what we're anxious to have occur. And I realize that Western Wireless is anxious to have that occur as well. But now they're seeking to have it just occur on part of it. And it seems to me that their request flows from the fact that the information that we receive from them, they later modify. I mean, that's the basis for it, and that's what gives rise to this. And I mean, that's another reason I think that it ought to just be heard together.
All right. Commissioner Starr, Mr. Smith, that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hansen. Do you have any questions?
No, go right ahead.
Chairman Starr, Vice Chairman Starr.
Why don't you go ahead? I do have some questions, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
Okay. I think maybe this is for Mr. Ryder and Ms. Rogers first, following up again on Commissioner Johnson and Ms. Weiss' question about the relationship between the counterclaim and the claim. Do you either, Mr. Ryder or Ms. Rogers, have anything to add in terms of whether or not the errors in the data might actually impact the damages calculation in the original complaint related to overcharges for those particular minutes? In other words, is the minute calculation affected by that? If you don't know.
Darla, I'd leave that to you to try to respond to, since you're more deeply involved in the specifics of this matter.
I'm not sure that I can answer that accurately. I am not, I mean, maybe we would have to rely on our experts to determine that. I'm getting a little echo here. Can you hear me all right?
We can hear you. There is some echo. I'm wondering if you're on a speaker. Do you also have a handset off the hook?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. No, we can hear you. There is some echo, but we can hear you.
I'll turn it down a little, see if that helps. So I don't know that I can answer that for you, Mr. Smith, and if we want to defer that question to some to our experts that's on the line, we can do that, or however you want to handle it.
Well, I guess, does anyone, there's only one expert on the line as I see it. Is Ron Williams on the line, Ms. Patel?
No, he isn't.
I mean, I don't know, Tal. It's, you know, this is oral argument. I know Larry Thompson's on the phone. Would you object, Tal, to having him offer an opinion here, or would you guys rather supplement the information you've provided to us with something, an affidavit or something, to address, I think, maybe both of Ms. Weiss' questions, one about the date and the other one about the whether or not the minute calculation under the original complaint is affected by any of this.
If I understand the question, and the question is, Larry, it simply be if the inter-MTA number is different than the 3% default, does that change the minutes of use?
That may be, and it may be a question you'd want to address to Tal as to whether that's relevant or not. I guess what that it presupposes in my mind the fact that the commission, if it did determine there was, let's say they did determine there was a breach of the covenant to negotiate in good faith, to me it would go to whether, the damages award, I guess, is somehow related to the calculation of that inter-MTA amount. And then, again, whether those two, whether the minutes of use pertaining to the original complaint are somehow affected by what you ultimately decide related to that, or what we ultimately decide. I just don't know the answer to that. Could Larry be heard on that? Or would you rather do it via supplemental filings from each party?
If it's a direct question, I just don't want to get into a testimony situation. If it's a question of whether the minutes of use will change,
the minutes of use under your original claim regarding the overcharges for transport and termination.
Limited to that question, if he wants to, he can say it. 20 words or less. I have no objection.
Larry, are you on there? Did you hear all that?
Yes, I am, Mr. Smith. They are definitely interrelated. What you do is you take the total minutes terminated, and you take the percentage of inter-MTA off of that, and the balance then of the minutes is what you calculate your recip comp on. So as the inter-MTA percentage grows, the amount that you apply your recip comp on shrinks, so they're definitely interrelated.
Thank you. You know, I, to be fair, Tal, if Ron Williams would have a different opinion on that, I certainly believe we should leave the record open here and permit him to offer his dissenting opinion on that, if he has one.
I will talk to him after the hearing is over about it, if possible.
Okay, and also, could you provide us with something, some kind of a filing, however brief, trying to address Rolaine's question about the date on which the data errors were discovered? Tal?
I can try.
Okay, just try.
From what Wilson's told me, is it was a phone conference, as he remembers it, and as his affidavit said, that they thought they caught most of it, but it was suspect because they didn't catch it all.
Okay. With respect to the, like as we said, hovering in the background, the transiting claim, do either of the parties have any opinion at this point in time on whether that is the type of claim that would be required to be included in this proceeding, the original proceeding under, you know, claim preclusion principles or not? Is it sufficiently part of the same set of transaction or set of transactions to require joinder under res judicata principles? Maybe I'll let Mr. Wieczorek, since you're the one that's kind of talked about that, maybe you could address that first.
Well, here's how, since the ReshipCon is only specific to Golden West, where there's multiple respondents here, if the claims as to overpayment, the claims as to inter-MTA, why the overpayments are different and the inter-MTA rates might be different as to each company ultimately, those claims are enough related that that it makes sense to have the group in. To the extent of, as I interpret the statutes and the law, I see that recip comp is what you would call like a permissive, what they would call a potentially permissive joinder issue, in that we could certainly hear it at this time, or I could certainly bring it as another action, and that's why my letter of July 15th addresses all the alternatives.
Thank you. Does Golden West have a response on that particular issue?
Darla, do you have a response on that?
I think my response is that it is an issue that arises under the exact same agreement as all of the other issues before the commission. What we are here, both parties are here, asking the commission, let's determine the rights and obligations of the parties under this reciprocal agreement. And the fact that we now have another claim out there, I think the appropriate way to handle it is to allow the parties to amend their pleadings and get all of these issues before the commission at the same time, because they are all interrelated, and they sort of, as Mr. Wieczorek said, they all come up in the course of the discovery and everything else that's taken place in this action. So I think the appropriate way to do this is to allow the parties to amend pleadings, bring everything in, and proceed to adjudicate all of the issues between the parties relating to this agreement at the same time.
On that issue of that, of the agreement, though, if I have a copy of the agreement here in front of me, And on page one, there's no numbering or anything for it, but it's the first paragraph after the now therefore clause in the agreement. The agreement says, this agreement is not intended to establish any terms, conditions, or pricing applicable to the provisioning of any transiting service. Maybe the parties could address how that does or doesn't affect whether we ought to require joinder or not of that issue that's out there.
I think that that is the very basis of Talbot's claim, is that the commission look at that particular provision under the contract and determine whether or not Golden West Companies or Golden West was in violation of it. That, I believe that's the essence of his claim, and it falls squarely under that provision of the contract. But again, due to the fact that we have not necessarily
Sherry, were you able to?
No. Excuse me, Darla.
Yes.
I lost you at the end of your sentence. This is Sherry. You said, but again, due to the fact that we have not necessarily explored that issue completely, you know, I don't know the source of their claim, but
I assume it is under that section of the agreement referred to.
Mr. Wysorek, would you care to respond to that?
Well, as I said just a moment ago, I see this as a joinder meeting. I don't see them as required to be heard together. I mean, the problem you get with Ms. Rogers' interpretation, as I read it, as I hear it, is that it's required to be all heard together. Then is every billing, if we go through the bills and find the bill as to something else, you know, do we waive any billing mistakes historically by this action? I don't think so. Here's the practicality of it for the commission as I see it. If it's going, that action can certainly be brought as a separate action in my analysis on the receipt time. If there's going to be continuance, it makes sense to hear it all at the same time. And that's just a practical way that I look at it. I don't want the continuance, and I believe I can bring that receipt comp as a separate complaint, and I will do that so Golden West is the only company involved with Western, and we can and go through just that one issue, and none of their affiliate companies are involved. But if there's going to be continuance, it would certainly make sense to hear it all.
In terms of the transiting claim, as I understand it, as I read that agreement, it excludes charges for transiting from the reach of the agreement, period, right? So that particular claim would not arise under the interconnection agreement.
That is correct.
With respect to, in terms of the transiting claim then, what does it arise under, Mr. Wysorek? Is that related to, are we talking transiting charges for originating traffic here?
My understanding from Mr. Williams is that this transiting appears to be Golden West transiting traffic originating from Western Wireless to primarily Vivian.
Okay. And the basis of those charges are what? Or maybe you don't know. Are those tariff?
I know. I believe those charges, as I understand it, right, that Golden West, there had been a transit agreement at one point that had expired, and there was no additional, there was no, it expired about the same time they redid the interconnection agreement, and agreed no transit charges on the first page of the interconnection agreement. And what happened was Golden West just kept charging the transiting charges. And it came up because when we were going back through and doing analysis of the bills, one noticed those charges kept coming when they should have stopped.
Okay. With respect to the motion to compel, if I'm understanding what I've heard here today, then is what you want us to compel is for Western Wireless to respond to Exhibit H, that particular production request. Is that exactly what we're being asked to do here?
Yes, that's what we're asking. And again, if it's Western Wireless' position that that is too onerous or broad of a time period, you know, we can amend the request, give them a lesser time frame. But yes, that's what we want.
Maybe I'm not seeing it all. I mean, part of it is I don't know that we have the time frame here, and I'm assuming that might be in some. Is that in a different? See, we don't. The commissioners don't ever see interrogatories in that, so we don't know what's in them, other than this one. Is there a?
Mr. Smith, this is top of Westmore. The request incorporates an interrogatory 27, and I've set that out. So you can see that expansive nature in my reply.
Oh, okay.
On the top, on the bottom of page 5 and the top of page 6. And I set that out because they don't specifically say that we can tell on that request. They're saying we provided it, and but I thought there was some confusion on that issue.
Mr. Wieczorek, I thought I heard Ms. Rogers make an offer recently to restrict the scope of that significantly and get it down to a level where it was reasonable for you, for your people maybe to respond to it. Might you, as I understood what you said, Darla, you said that that Mr. Thompson might be able to get by with a couple of weeks worth of data instead of 13 months or whatever the original request was. Is that what you said, Darla?
Yeah, I believe it's in the original study that the parties agreed to. I think the time period was 15 days. Maybe Larry can correct me if I'm wrong. So if we're looking at that time frame or whatever Mr. Thompson needs with the data, yes, I believe we would be willing to restrict it.
And Mr. Wieczorek, would you address it in that context, please?
I'm a little at a disadvantage because I don't know what kind of burden and how long that would take to obtain that data. It's my understanding from talking to Western Wireless when they obtained that 15 days of data, they had to do a bunch of preliminary work before they could obtain the data. Now, the data, of course, was data that they were trying to accumulate in the format under that test methodology. It's raw data dumps. I don't know what kind of lead time they need and whether that's, you know, particularly difficult. I mean, that's one of the, given the short time frame of this, the fact that they have that information since June 30th, it's not something I've been able to give a good feeling from the client. You know, of course, if they say we want the first 2 weeks of September or something along those lines, that's something that's I could certainly go to the client and see if that's what they'd have to go through to accomplish that. But frankly, it's not something I can agree to here on the phone.
Okay. And I guess that's another question I had written down here, and I forgot to ask it earlier. I guess, why did Golden West wait well over a month after it got this response back before doing anything, before coming in for a motion to compel, either Mr. Rader or Ms. Rogers?
I can respond to that, I believe. The way we were to develop our evidence with regards to our counterclaim was to demonstrate that.
Just a minute here. Sherry, are you able to hear?
I got it, but it's, you know.
For some reason, you're really feeding back out there, Darla.
Is this any better?
Oh, it's tremendously better.
Okay. when we first received the responses to the interrogatories, and again with the first set, we were once again assured that the data supplied with regard to Golden West was accurate, we were then able to compare that with our own data study, which incidentally excluded IXC traffic, to demonstrate that, that our own traffic study and the data provided by WWC on Golden West was extremely close. There was not any variance. That being the case, we felt that it was reasonable to present our claim on an adjustment to the inter-MTA factor based upon our own traffic study, because it was demonstrated in the case of Golden West how close those two studies were with regard to an appropriate adjustment. So we didn't become aware then until the second round of discovery responses came in that now WWC is claiming, oh, well, never mind, our data that we provided is not accurate because it includes IXC traffic. And so that basically then renews why we were asking for that data, the CDRs, for all of the companies. And so it's like we're back to the drawing board here as a result of their response to the second interrogatory. So I think my response to your question is the significance of their failure to respond initially really did not become apparent until the second round of discovery responses.
Thank you.
Mr. Smith, can I just interject for a moment?
Please.
Just to clarify, they're seeking data dumps for all companies now, and that was the question they did in June. We said that's too time-consuming, et cetera. The only CDRs they've ever had were for Golden West, at least with the respondents that are involved in this case. So I just want to make that clear that this is, sounds like what they're asking for, they asked for, and the request is for all companies. It sounds like that's what they want now. But as we, my June 30th answer was, or Western Wireless, it was clear that, look, we thought that was overly broad, unduly burdensome, and we're not going to do it. And the final thing I have to keep coming back to is, I don't know what interrogatory they were pointing to where they were assured that this, these numbers were perfect. The only interrogatory they've attached is the one that said what methodology was planned to be used. I take exception to this assured and guaranteed language. I mean, they got the best data we have for both West Coast 50 days we can follow.
Mr. Smith, if I could refer the commission to Exhibit C of our motion, which is the response to interrogatory 15, which is in the second set of interrogatories. If you look at the third paragraph of that answer, it says the specialized traffic study was to identify inter-MTA traffic as a percentage of all traffic terminated from Western's network to each South Dakota ILEC, excluding traffic terminated via an inter-exchange carrier. That is the third assurance or representation that we had from Western Wireless that the IXC traffic was excluded. It's also contained in an email from Mike Wilson to Larry Thompson dated September 28th of 2004, and it says, study exclusion. Calls originating on Western's network and routed for termination via inter-exchange carriers. So I think the representations are pretty clear. I don't know that I have ever or that what Golden West has ever referred to perfect data or guarantees, but it would seem that we could reasonably rely upon the specific representations made to our expert by their expert.
And Ms. Smith, I don't want to beat this horse, but all I'm trying to point out is she keeps pointing to what we said we were going to try to do on the study and saying that that was the same thing as saying these numbers that we were able to accomplish at all. And we attempted to do that in good faith. Mike Wilson's affidavit makes it clear that we couldn't get rid of all the IXC stuff.
that he told Larry that. So I mean, the fact that we wanted to do that, I agree that's what we wanted to try to do. Fact is, though, it could not be done.
Okay. Thank you. And back on exactly on the motion to compel then, just so that, I mean, just so that I know what you're asking us to do, is that self-explanatory with respect to the Exhibit H? Is that it, or am I hearing some differences here? I'm kind of confused, and maybe I'm just losing my concentration here.
We would like the commission to compel Western Wireless to provide us with CDRs for the other Golden West companies in this action, and if the interrogatory, the production request number 2, as it relates back to interrogatory 27, is too broad, we are certainly willing to pare that down to whatever time frame our expert deems appropriate. In addition, since we are now, and this goes more to our motion to allow additional discovery, since we have now, since the discovery deadline, learned that perhaps the information that was provided to us for Golden West is not accurate, we would like this commission to compel Western Wireless to give us accurate data on Golden West and, in fact, on all the companies. And that's why in our request, in our motion to compel, we've asked that the commission require Western Wireless to certify us to the accuracy of their data. And, I'm not saying 100%. I mean, whatever is reasonable in industry standards. But we need to know that what we're given is accurate.
Do you have a response, Tal, to that?
Well, yeah, this is getting to be kind of a shifting sands on me a little bit because, first of all, it's my understanding, is there is no industry standard for collecting inner MTA. Second, if the CDR, and I'll go back to the information we collected last fall for Golden West and 4 other companies, not a part of this action, took months of work. Literally months of work, and you had to contact outside vendors, you had to prearrange with people how you collected that data, because the data being collected, you had to collect data not usually collected. Now, that's a big difference from what I understood to be the discussion here just a couple minutes ago as to whether to get raw data. Those are extreme differences, what we're going to have to do is go through a whole other analysis for these companies. It is not going to be something where you can dump any kind of data. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of going through numbers line by line to eliminate some of the calls. So, and in that situation, I know Western's going to take a position that to do it for every company is overly broad and unduly burdensome. And if the commission orders it, we will see things. Protection to try to get reimbursed for all the time and effort to get it done.
Okay. Do the commissioners have additional questions?
I do, but I want to just briefly consult with you before I ask that question. Thanks.
I'm just looking at this again.
I'm going to just ask John a question. Thanks.
Okay.
The question I have relates more to the effect of some of the issues that we've talked about today than maybe the issues themselves. And I think we've done a pretty good job of fleshing out information that at least I would need to roll on the motions. But part of the ongoing discussions here are highlighting we may have some inaccurate information, and I don't want to get into fault or who said this, who said that, but we've got an upcoming hearing in just a matter of days, and I'm a little bit concerned that if we proceed with it, and I don't want to grant unnecessary, extensions or postponements, but I'm a little bit concerned that if we go forward at the hearing that we may not be giving people adequate time to get the information they need, to analyze it, and to really go in there and resolve these issues and to do so effectively, and especially in light of hearings that are coming up in, I think, about 10 days or less. And I wanted to get the perspective, and maybe this is even almost a Larry Thompson-type question, but I'm just the perspective of the attorneys and maybe the people who are crunching the numbers. I mean, are we going to be able to go to hearing as it's scheduled? With the question marks we have hanging over this, because as I mentioned, I don't really want to just grant an extension for an extension's sake. At the same time, if we wait a few more weeks, give you the opportunity to deal with the numbers and then come back and have a hearing that everyone's better prepared for, I think we're probably served well in long term by going that route. Plus in earlier proceedings on this in this case. I've made it clear that whoever it is, if someone's found, holding on to somebody else's money, certainly there are interest provisions and other things that can kick in to deal with that issue. So I certainly don't want to ignore the fact that those sort of allegations are out there. But I'm just curious to hear from the parties and maybe even some of the technical people about their abilities to deal with the information they have and maybe some future information they need, and to do so within a matter of probably less than a week and a half. Mr. Ryder.
If I would respond, I would say that I don't know how we could prepare properly for the hearing if it were to be held on the 30th and 31st with the change now of the information that we thought was reliable, and now it's by the maker of it deemed unreliable. So we're in a box.
Thank you. Mr. Weisert?
Well, I want the commission to understand that as that data, and it's only data of the Golden West, that's all the data we're talking about, not for any other companies. And there doesn't seem to be any problem going forward on all the other companies without that data. Number two, that data, you're not going to get, as far as I can tell from talking to my people, you're not going to get better data from us because we simply cannot coordinate with some of the long-distance carriers. You just can't match their data up to get it done. I go right back to what my reply was, and that is, this is not a be-all, end-all. We know it's high in those calls. And I think the best the commission's ever going to get is probably an estimate of what the difference is.
Isn't kind of a follow on that, though. If I understand what they're asking us for, either via Telrite, either it'd be via us to order it via motion to compel or to allow some additional discovery so it can just go through the normal process, is alternatively asking for raw data from switches so that Larry can run the analysis himself.
And I don't know what that means, frankly, Mr. Smith, but what to say raw data, because they say raw data and how do they phrase that? They include a couple of provisos in there, so I'm not exactly sure what they're looking at. But I think that I still think there's going to be, no matter who runs it, I think there's going to be some, I'm not sure I've got everything in this. I mean, you're never going to get to a position where the switches show exactly what these numbers are. And that's why the interconnection agreement talks about a method of study.
So, Mr. Wazorik, Commissioner Johnson here, is it your client's contention then that they've made all reasonable requests to provide the data requested?
Well, my client's position as to the Golden West stuff is that those are as good numbers as they can come up with under the study as to the Golden West company. done. They did five companies to get a benchmark. That information and all the collection, the contact of the vendors was never done for these other companies. But it's incredibly time-consuming and expensive to do that.
And in your, Commissioner Johnson, in your response, am I right in remembering that you indicated that on the raw data dump, still would give you the InterMTA data that's being requested? If that field is not routinely collected, you know, it's not in there?
That is what I'm told by the Western Wireless people. It is a straight raw data dump. Isn't going to give you that information anyway.
Sorry to interject.
Well, that's fine. Are there additional commissioner questions? Does staff have any recommendations at this time to provide to the commission?
Sure. This is Relaine Weiss. I'm going to start with the motion to allow additional discovery because actually that impacts the recommendations on all the other motions. Staff's going to recommend that the commission allow additional discovery, primarily to allow discovery related to the inter-MTA traffic study. And I know we can get in discussion about guarantees and assertions and stuff, but I think that if you read through the interrogatories and some of the other data that's been provided, I think you could have reasonably relied that on the June 30th that the IXC traffic, it did appear that it was excluded, and then on the August 5th answers, it certainly was stated that the study was in fact significantly flawed. And the other troubling part is that I think it was the fact that Western Wireless says it's significantly flawed that kind of relates to its claim that, you know, they're double dipping now. And I think all of those issues that staff and the Golden West Company should be allowed additional discovery on. And then going to the motion compel, I think that the discussion this morning really highlights the fact that the commission should certainly deny the motion to compel. I think that it's unclear as to what Golden West is asking for. I mean, I think they've changed their position somewhat, and they were asking for more than just responses to Exhibit H. They were asking for raw data. Prior to that, it appeared they weren't asking for raw data, so that isn't perhaps even a proper part of a motion to compel. Staff recognizes, and I think all of this can be handled by allowing additional discovery. Western Wireless will still be allowed to object to specific discovery requests. But for now, I think what the commission should do is they need to encourage the parties to get together and discuss their experts need to get together and discuss these issues. It makes no sense for them to just say, give us this, give us that, if in fact this information can't be provided. They need to get together, they need to discuss it and try to come up with a reasonable way to look at this. Then going to the motion to strike or prohibit Western Wireless from contesting the accuracy of the data, again, the commission should deny this motion. As Mr. Wazorik states, this is a fact-intensive issue. I also agree with Mr. Wazorik that 15.637B does not appear to be especially applicable. I don't think there's a question about them not failing to follow a discovery order here. And going to the issue of the transiting traffic, I would note that the motion to allow additional discovery, I believe within that motion, they also move that the commission require Western Wireless to file an amended complaint. I think if the commission allows the motion to allow additional discovery, then it would be up to Western Wireless as to whether they want to amend the complaint with respect to the transiting issue. And which gets me to the point of postponement and bifurcation. Given our recommendation on the motion to allow additional discovery, I would recommend that the commission grant Golden West's motion to postpone. After that recommendation, the issue becomes whether the commission should postpone the entire hearing or grant the motion to bifurcate. Although initially I was thinking that the commission, you know, maybe could bifurcate this, and I understand Western Wireless's concern with respect to this issue. After reading through the complaint or the counterclaim and the answer in the counterclaim and listening to the discussion this morning, I just don't think at this point that the commission can really be sure that there are not overlapping factual issues here. And it just doesn't, and if there are common issues of fact, I don't see how that, I don't think it would be in the best interest to bifurcate any of these issues. And, you know, after looking through the answer and the counterclaim, and they didn't bring this up, but there do appear to be possible legal issues that could affect both issues. For example, in their counterclaim, respondents allege that Western Wireless failed to negotiate in good faith, which caused a breach of agreement. They're also alleging that 4931.110 applies, which could conceivably, I'm not saying any of these arguments have merit, but I'm just saying conceivably that could affect the amount of receipt comp due, depending on how the commission interprets that the statute and the agreement. I just don't see where bifurcation will get us very far in this case. And I would also note with the motion to postpone that Golden West requested sanctions in the event the hearing is delayed. I certainly recommend that this request be denied. Again, I don't believe that the commission has sufficient facts before it to determine whether any sanctions are warranted. And I think I covered all of the motions.
Thank you. Do the commissioners have any questions?
I don't.
Nor do I.
No, I don't have any questions either. This commission has, and I appreciate Rolaine's explanation. I agree with her comments.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Weiss. You know, this is probably out of line, maybe, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. And when we're talking about the damages related to, at this point, with the numbers you have related to inter MTA factor, right? I mean, what kind of number are we talking about there by comparison with the Western Wireless overpayment number? I mean, are we getting close to balancing out, or are you still looking at Golden West having a significant outstanding balance due and payable?
I know that Darla has spoken with our client about that general question, and she probably is better able to respond to that than I am.
Do you have anything to say on that, Darla?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
According to our calculations, we believe that if the inter-MTA factor were appropriately adjusted at Western Wireless, Golden West, significant dollars above it.
Now you're cutting. You've been cutting out for a while. I'm sorry, Darla, could you pick up and repeat?
Okay, please? According to our initial calculations, we believe that if the inner MTA factor was appropriately adjusted, that Western Wireless would owe Golden West monies above and beyond what they claim we owe them.
Okay, you answered my question. What is the pleasure of the commission? Does the commission wish to vote at this time, or do you want to recess? Or?
Mr. Smith, this is Commissioner Johnson. Mm-hmm. I would move that we recess until Monday, maybe 1 o'clock, if that's the pleasure of the other commissioners. I would like to review a couple of facts before ruling.
Okay.
This is Commissioner Hanson. I'll second that.
And this is Commissioner Saar. I have our Deputy Executive Director approaching the mic, and she may point out a flaw in our reasoning.
I'm just going to remind you that the SDTA meetings are one.
Yeah, we do have the SDTA meetings, but I think we could go ahead then and schedule this for one. We do probably have to check on to certain issues about availability of telephone lines, so on and so forth, rooms. I imagine we probably could at the very least go into our conference room, you know, subject to working out some of the details. I would concur on the motion. Do we run into, but I'm going to ask John Smith the question. Do we run into any sort of procedural thing? I mean, we're adjourning till 1 o'clock. I mean, I suppose.
I don't think we do because it's an adjournment. If we were scheduling a whole new proceeding, yes, then we'd have the 24-hour notice business and all that, which we could still meet. But
right.
I think we have the right to adjourn, and as long as we're adjourning and reconvening Yes.
And if we came back in and had to move the time or something on Monday?
Or not adjourning, but we're going into recess.
Recess,
yeah.
Mr. Smith,
am
I right in assuming that it has to be a time certain?
I think we should provide notice right here on the record, yes,
okay.
If we can. But everybody here in the room, all the attorneys and everything, know we're going to be in recess for a period of time. And we need to get this done on a practical level.
Yeah, and let's, we have the motion, we have the second, we have the concurrence. We're all set to go to 1 o'clock on Monday, and I'll ask staff to work as diligently as they possibly can and to make arrangements with the attorneys. But obviously, we've got that hearing scheduled for the very next week, so we need to be making some decisions here as quickly as possible. But I agree with Commissioner Johnson's thoughts, and it'll give us an opportunity to dissect some of this information that came up today. The one last thing, though, I do want to check. Sherry, do you know on your schedule if you're available Monday at 1?
I know that I have something scheduled Monday afternoon. I don't know the time right now. When we leave, I can get my calendar. It's in the car.
Okay.
But I don't know if it's 1 or 2.
Mr. Vice Chairman?
Yes.
If it would be more convenient, I would certainly withdraw my motion to offer a substitute motion that adjourned rather to recess until 10 o'clock Monday morning.
I also have something Monday morning.
It sounds like for now, 1 o'clock is going to be our best shot.
What's everybody look like later this afternoon, or do you feel we need more time? I want to ask one other question relevant to that. With respect to the two questions that Rolaine had asked and that we allowed Larry to speak to, would the commissioners feel that it's appropriate to allow Western Wireless to make a record on that in case they have a divergent view? And that was related to the interrelationship between minutes.
Yes, Stephanie Johnson here. Certainly, if there's disagreement over what Mr. Thompson said, then I do think it's appropriate. How long are you recommending we pause on the ruling?
Well, that's one reason I asked about this afternoon. We could probably get together, but I don't know, Tal, if you want to submit something, we'd want to give you ample time to do that.
Well.
Or, go ahead.
Well, I'll try to talk to Mr. Williams as he tried to make notes as to what Mr. Thompson said, and discuss it with Mr. Williams and try to get some kind of response.
You know, we had a suggestion here in Pierre that may be a good one. I'm going to look at Sherry and ask her, would you be available to think at 12:30? I don't know where your next
can I point. Go off the record for
yes.
This, or do you want this on?
Why don't we go off the record
okay.
then?
What I think I have is I have a doctor's deposition at around 9. They usually only take about an hour to an hour and a half. So I would say even 11:30 would be safe, and then any time into the lunch hour. But, I do need
well,
to get checked.
And I guess my concern is I don't want to have you running into whatever your afternoon appointment is. My guess is once we get this all ironed out, I think we're talking about probably 10 minutes on the record,
yeah.
Maybe even less.
Okay.
But because I think we're just going to come back on the record rule and go from there, unless there might be some, unless Mr. Weiserich files something that brings something else up as far as, his opportunity to file additional, I don't know if I'm going to say testimony, but information. So I think the suggestion was made by one of the staff to go at 12:30, and I think that's probably a pretty good one. Do you expect that would resolve your issue?
I think it would.
Okay. Commissioner Johnson, would you want to amend your motion?
I'd be happy to do that with just a question. Would it make more sense to try to get down this afternoon and then if the town would have some important new information, we could accept that at 11 or
I think probably, my thought is to be on the safe side, and we're also dealing with some phone line issues and those type of things. I think we're just better off waiting till Monday, and I really don't see that anyone's going to be particularly prejudiced by giving really what it amounts to be staff a little more time to kind of work on some of these details. So I think, I appreciate the suggestion on Friday. My feeling is just go Monday at 12:30 and resolve it. That'll give Tal the opportunity to do what he needs to do, to at least to check with his client. And gives our PUC staff the opportunity to try to get some of the facilities and phone lines lined up.
And that's you were off the record, and I couldn't quite hear Sherry. That works better than anything a little bit earlier Monday from her?
Yes.
She's nodding her head.
Okay.
instruct the witness to verbally respond so the court reporter can write what she's saying. And I will second.
And I concur.
With that, we will see everyone 12:30 on Monday. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. This is Gary Hansen, and I'm PUC Commissioner. I'm with Commissioners Bob Saar and Dusty Johnson. This is room. We are in room form 12 of the State Capitol Building, Pierce, South Dakota. This is time and place, Monday, August 22nd, 2005, 9 a.m., for the Public Utilities Commission meeting. We'll first check the persons who are joining us telephonically. Tal Wysorek.
I'm here.
Is there anyone else with you there that may be participating?
I'm here.
And Vantage Point. Larry Thompson is present here, and I believe you said there are some people on the phone with us. Some folks from Vantage Point joining us?
Correct. Wendy Harper.
Good morning. Excuse me. Good afternoon. I have a motion to read, and then in the matter of CT05-001, and then the commissioners are going to open up the proceedings for comments from the participants. We are not looking for additional argument. We are simply looking for comments on the motion. It's a lengthy motion, and we want to make certain that the functionality of the motion will work. In the matter of CT05-001, I move that we rule on all of the pending motions generally in accordance with staff counsel's recommendations. Specifically, I move that Golden West's motion to prohibit WWC from contesting the accuracy of data provided, motion to strike late filed claim, and motion to compel and Western Wireless's motion to bifurcate be denied. Instead, the parties shall each file amendments to their proceedings to conform to the evidence revealed through discovery and to reflect any additional claims and answers thereto related to Golden West's intercarrier billings to WWC that have come to light during the discovery and analysis process. By August 31st, the parties shall submit to the Commission their proposals for a procedural schedule for the remainder of this case. The next available dates for hearing in this matter are November 7, 8, 9, with a 3 p.m. ending time on the 8th. I further move that Golden West's motion to permit additional discovery be granted to allow full exploration by both parties of the minutes of use data and other issues, and also to address any additional claims and defenses that are added or modified through amendments to the pleadings. Further motion that staff counsel's suggestion be adopted in the form of an order that in connection with the extension of discovery, the parties' technical experts shall meet in a good faith effort to resolve the billing data issues, including access on reasonable terms to the data in the possession of the other party. This meeting of the parties' respective data experts shall take place at a location acceptable to them and to staff, or if they cannot agree, in the Commission's conference room. Staff and staff counsel are directed to be present at such meeting to assist the parties in attempting to resolve any disputes their experts may have involving the data, access to data, and related issues. The parties shall submit their proposed date for this meeting in their procedural schedule proposals. Lastly, I move that Golden West's motion to postpone hearing be granted to allow for the filing of additional or amended claims and to conduct additional discovery so that all issues involving the billing in question can be addressed and resolved in this proceeding. I move that the hearing in this matter be continued until November 7, 2005, commencing at 10 a.m., continuing at 8:30 a.m. on November 8, 2005, and carrying over to November 9th if necessary, unless the party's procedural schedule submittals demonstrate that this date is not available for them, in which case alternative hearing dates will be scheduled. That's the end of the motion. and I'm interested in hearing comments from, excuse me, the commissioners are interested in hearing comments from the parties. Who would like to go first? Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
First, I wish to make certain that Tal is still on the line with us.
I am.
All right. Thank you.
Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to comment. I believe that on behalf of my clients that we think that this motion is very fair. We are certainly willing to meet with the experts from Western Wireless and try to resolve some of these issues on our own and with staff's involvement. I appreciated Ms. Weiss' suggestions on that when she made her recommendation last week. I guess I would just have one question or query. I believe that we had a couple of other pending motions that were heard on Friday, and I do not recall that there was a ruling on those, specifically the motion to strike the double damages claim, but maybe you ruled on that and I forgot about that.
Those were both ruled.
Okay.
The double damages and attorney's fees were both granted.
Okay.
The motions to dismiss.
Thank you. That clarifies that. No, we're happy to cooperate with this motion, and we feel it's fair. Thank you.
This is Tom Weiser, I come back to Western Wireless. And the one date we're supposed to file amended pleadings that get it August 31st. Is that correct?
May I address that, Mr. Chairman? No, that's just for a date to file a proposed procedural schedule.
Okay, that's a proposed procedural
schedule. It may be that you guys would decide that an appropriate date for filing amendments that are known now, and there may be other stuff that comes up. It might be a month from now or whatever you think, but just by the 30th, come in with your ideas, and I'm assuming and hoping that would occur after some discussion between the parties and staff, and if you want me to be on the call, I'd be willing to do so. And let's just try to come up with something that'll work. Is that okay, Tal?
Yes, I'm always hip for coming up with something that works.
Good. Did you catch that word there, Sherry?
That kind of dates me back to the 60s.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Tal, did you have any other questions or comments?
I do appreciate the commission laying some of this out, and I appreciate that we have a date certain for the hearing to work against to kind of keep everybody's feet to the fire. Because the other thing that's kind of looming out, just for the commission's understanding, is these interconnection agreements are done this year unless we negotiate to continue them further. So it would be nice to actually resolve some of these interconnection issues before we start fighting over the new interconnection agreement. So.
You mean negotiating, right, Tal?
Strongly negotiating.
Thank you. Are there any further comments on the motion?
No, staff has no problems or nothing to add. Thank you.
If there are no further comments on the motion, then the motion stands as I stated it and subject to a second concurrence.
Mr. Chairman, I would gladly second that. In my experiences, I realize that there's some impetus to get to a hearing at the same time. My experience over the last few years has been that the more preparation the parties can put into it, especially when you're dealing with important information and data, that goes a long ways towards having a better ultimate resolution. And hopefully there's still the door open to try to figure out ways that this might be settled and avoid the hearing in the first place.
Mr. Chairman, I concur.
Thank you, gentlemen, and that concludes the meeting.